Hi, and welcome to episode 66 of Fresh Out of Tokens podcast. This is Tanya, also known as Cypher Tier, and to my somewhere right, left, east, or west is David, who has been amazing.
Hello.
Hello. And, you know, and agreed to do back-to-back recordings, so thank you, David.
That's all right.
And we finally have Tim Childry with us when all three of us are here, and I'm not off gallivanting somewhere, so yay. Hi, Tim.
Hi, everyone. Glad to be on with the whole crew.
Yes, and thank you so much for all the times that you've sat in for me and you know, and helped, you know, kind of co-pilot in my absence. I greatly appreciate that.
It's always a pleasure.
Yay. And you know you're always welcome to co-pilot in one of our absences. But for anyone listening, we have teas and other items in the I Need Diverse Games Spreadshirt Shop, where we split the profits 50-50 with our friend Chachi Bobinks. We have a blog to compliment the show, so follow us over at outoftokenscast.com. If you have questions, compliments, episode, or guest feedback, feel free to drop us a note at freshoutoftokens@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter at outoftokenscast. Musical accompaniment for Fresh Out of Tokens is provided by Mike Moody, and you can hear more of her work at soundcloud.com, Mike Moody-1. And with that out of the way, so we get a chance to talk to you, and it's not you sitting in for one of us, so yay. So, you know, you're not actually in the gaming industry, so this will be interesting. So for those folks who don't know who you are, Tim, can you give them a bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So I am, of course, a lifelong gamer, even though I'm not in gaming. And I'm a dad and a musician, and I work in IT. So I kind of come here and there and everywhere. And this week I'm kind of flying solo because I just started a new job, so I couldn't go on a planned vacation with the rest of my family. So this is perfect timing to hop on the show.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, it sucks that you're not on the planned vacation, but yay, you were able to come and hang out with us.
Definitely a good way to pass the time. Much better than my nights previously.
Gotcha.
Yeah. What did you do on previous nights?
Basically just sat around. Basically previous nights, I was just kind of sitting around either watching movies, catching up on shows, or gaming.
Makes sense.
Generally being a introverted, antisocial.
Now, I know you've answered this question before, but what is your gaming origin story?
So, I don't remember the year, but I want to say it was the year the NES came out. My parents bought me one for Christmas. Prior to that, we'd had like a ColecoVision in the house that was my brother's, but the NES was all mine, and I kind of went bonkers on that with Mario and Duck Hunt and everything else I could get my hands on. And never really stopped from there. And I never owned a Sega system until the Dreamcast. But yeah, I was very firmly in the gaming ecosystem from about 5 years old on.
Okay. You know, you've been a guest and guest co-host before. So, other than a new job, what have you been up to since you were last hanging out with us?
Well, that's been the brunt of it, trying to kind of get things cleared for that transition. I've been throwing around musical ideas that haven't actually come into any kind of fruition yet, so I can't say, hey, I recorded some new songs, check them out. but I'm hoping that something will actually come of that that I can record soon. Now that I actually have things settling back down into a routine again.
Cool. Because you and Mike Moody collaborated on the music that is being used in Invisibility Blues, correct?
We did. Yeah, I recorded the main melody, and then she kind of kicked up to 11 with production, harmonies, other instrumentation besides the guitar. And yeah, she really brought what I was very happy with and made it just a whole new level of awesome, I think.
Cool.
Yeah, we love Mike.
Yes.
So, you tweeted about your family taking games and things away because of their influence, like D&D and video games a while ago. Can I ask what brought that up?
Yeah, so around that time, I had gone to a family dinner. You know, our family's kind of spread out a little bit, so we try to get together for birthdays, and that's usually when we see everyone. But Pokemon Go was, you know, new enough that everyone was excited who played. And my nephew, who doesn't have a phone, has been dying to play it. So we came in our Pokemon hunting gear, and you know, I had a Pokemon shirt on. And my stepbrother, who is living with my very, very, very fundamentalist dad, decided he was going to shame my nephew and say that he knew a missionary who'd gone to a remote tribe in Africa, direct quote, who recognized all the Pokemon and told him their names and their demonic powers. And I see that look on my nephew.
Continue, I'm sorry.
And my wife and I kind of just rolled our eyes and, you know, rolled our eyes with our nephew because he's kind of a shit stirrer, my stepbrother is. And he had very clearly done it just to antagonize, you know, everyone else at the table if he could. And so we all just shared an eye roll and moved on. But it kept on gnawing inside my head because I knew I had heard it somewhere before. So I looked it up the next day and found the original story, which I can actually give you for show notes if you want, which was some, you know, second or third hand story about missionaries in the Amazon. You notice, not remote Africa, that wonderful country of remote Africa. but, yeah, they were talking to a converted shaman who didn't give them names, didn't give them anything except for, like, it bites and scratches and claws. So it was this stupid kind of third-hand story, and that just sent me down the memory rabbit hole of all this stupid, stupid shit I heard in churches growing up about demonic influences from Dungeons and Dragons and demonic influences from Harry Potter and how it would teach your kids to be witches. And so that put me in mind of all the things that, you know, were restricted or taken away in my own house. So that's kind of where that came from.
Wow. The demonic influence of D&D. You know, I remember that. Because, like, my mom was just really weird. She had no clue that I actually was going to play D&D with people. But it's like, you know, she's very much, you know, Vatican II, dyed-in-the-wool Roman Catholic. How this happened, I don't know. Just, this was before I was born. But she was firmly in the camp of D&D and movies, certain movies. And certain things were just, you know, they're the work of the devil. And I'm like, you realize this sounds ridiculous. But of course, being a teenager trying to tell this to my mother did not go well. So, you know, like, I wasn't allowed to have a lot of stuff because either her religious beliefs or my grandmother's kind of, you know, post-depression growing up and used to not having a lot of things. So there was a lot of stuff I didn't get to experience until I either lived on my own or hung out with friends. But you brought up...
I know that feeling.
Yeah, which is why I don't live at home anymore. But, you know, you brought up things like being taken away. What kinds of things were either denied or just flat out taken away because of either parental belief or family belief that it was demonic or, you know, whatever ridiculous idea they had about entertainment at the time?
How much time do we have? Well. So let's see. Starting from when I was about 4 or 5 years old, we couldn't watch He-Man and the Masters of the Universe because only Jesus was the master of the universe. Dead serious. We couldn't watch Thundercats because they had to be demonic in some way, shape, or fashion, although they couldn't name how. Let's see. What else? Of course, Dungeons & Dragons was out, but also the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon was out because it was called Dungeons & Dragons. So at one point, I remember seeing the cartoon come on at my grandparents and thinking it looked really cool, you know, which going back and watching it as an adult, I was like, what was I thinking? But as soon as the title card pops up, it gets turned off. Couldn't watch Ghostbusters because, you know, ghosts were demons and... I guess in the cartoon they did kind of fight demons and Lovecraftian things more often than not. And as we got as I was younger, I didn't care as much, but as I got older, it kind of got into my craw. The kind of cult that we were a part of was very much against any kind of music with a backbeat. So any kind of rock and roll, including Christian rock, until I was a teenager who just said, basically, I don't give a fuck what you say. This is the music I want to listen to. But yeah, the most current music I had really heard before I was a teenager would be like the Beatles. And even that was like an occasional thing as it came on an oldie station or something.
Wow.
And of course, my most memorable thing being taken away came when my brother was in college. We went down for some big air show they were having at his school. And Wizards of the Coast had a tent set up where they were giving out free starter packs for Magic Gathering. And I thought, hey, this looks really cool. I was maybe 14, 15 at the time. So I, you know, snuck off from the group and went to the booth and picked up my own starter pack, hid it very carefully and took it home. And over the course of several months to maybe even a year, I played multiple times with friends. We were all really digging it. I had what I thought was a foolproof hiding place. And then one day I come home from visiting a friend and Mom's holding the pack in her hand. And I'm like, oh, fuck. And so she made me put the pack in the fireplace and burn it.
Oh.
And I was just like, seriously?
I mean, clearly...
I mean, unfortunately, I hadn't been... Oh, go ahead.
I know, just like, you clearly have been playing this game and nothing changed.
Yeah. Fortunately, I hadn't been, like, super into collecting at that point because I didn't have much chance to go places where they sold boosters. So it was just a starter deck that I lost, but... That was just like, I'd had so much fun playing that with friends, and not only losing it, but having to burn it myself was like just utterly ridiculous.
Oh, wow. That just gives me like a twinge of pain hearing the story.
I mean, on the plus side, after I moved out, after my wife and I got married, we saw a big box pack at a store and decided to pick it up and learn how to play together. And so we kind of bonded a lot in our first year of marriage over just playing Magic the Gathering's Ravnica edition.
Oh, that's so cool.
And she's an incredible deck builder. I'm nowhere near her level at deck building. She made some decks that were just nasty. No one wanted to play with her.
Wow, that's awesome. David, did you ever have an experience like that? Because I think we're in an age range. I don't know if you would have had an experience like that growing up.
Yeah, I certainly knew people who did. My mother is fairly secular, so.
I will trade because my mother's very much dyed in the wool, you know. And she's not even like with the current Pope. She's like holding on to Vatican II. Which I'm just like, come on, man. Just let that go.
I knew just so many evangelicals. They like Oklahoma, so, for some reason.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I've heard these stories, but I didn't have too many problems with this, no. So we also wanted to ask, did you ever worry about doing the same things before or after becoming a parent?
I mean, you can't say no to that because, yeah, you're, as a parent, you're always worried about the 10 billion ways that you have in front of you that you could potentially fuck up and fuck up your child's life. But we both kind of made a concrete decision to really be as open as we could with our daughter. And of course she's three, so you're not open about as many things as you might be at three, but we don't want to hide things from her. When she asks questions, we're honest with her. The most taking away that we've done has been a extremely religious bedtime book that my dad gave my daughter. And I haven't taken it away, but I have judiciously edited it while reading it whenever she's picked it out for bedtime.
Yeah, I don't think that's, you know, that's keeping, you know, a very good boundary, I think, versus, oh, you can't play this card game because it has demons.
Yeah, as far as that goes, that's not something I... You know, again, of course, that's a possibility. I've seen parents who were utter libertines when they had toddlers turn into, you know, the strictest parents I've ever seen when they have teenagers. So I'm not sure what causes that transition. I'm hoping to avoid that transition. I don't anticipate being that kind of, you know, parent of a teenager, but until it happens, you can't say, I'll never be like that. But yeah, it's the kind of thing that I do want to avoid because I want her to have freedom to make her own choices as she grows up.
You talked about this a little bit, but I was wondering, what's the worst misconception that you remember hearing about games influencing or being an influence on young minds?
So until Pokemon was like the target of choice in so many fundamentalist churches, I always thought it was Jack Thompson.
Oh, really?
Because I was a teenager in the era of, you know, the Joe Biden and Jack Thompson going, you know, bonkers over Mortal Kombat or Grand Theft Auto. And I constantly thought, this is just the most ridiculous bullshit. Of course, it's not going to make kids into killers. You know, what are you talking about? But honestly, once the church I was going to started talking about demons and Pokemon, I was like, okay, never mind. Carry on. This is much worse.
Wow.
I mean, because literally, the pastor of one of the last churches I ever went to had a sermon on the dangers of Pokemon. And it's one of those things where, at that point, I was, you know, 16, 17 when he started this. Maybe even 18, 19, I'm not sure. I just remember just sitting there rolling my eyes through the whole thing.
I'm just, like, wondering how you get demons from Pokemon, because they are, like, there's a fish that does nothing. How is that dangerous?
Well, you see, that fish turns into a dragon.
Oh.
This is true. I don't think Magikarp was ever one of the ones they were concerned about, but you've got to understand that for fundamentalist Christians, there are so many things, many deeply rooted in Western imperialism, that are demonic or objectionable. So having creatures that use Zen for moves, like Tauros has Zen Headbutt as a move, having creatures that use hypnotism, you know, you got Hypno, having psychic Pokemon, like Abra and Kadabra and Alakazam. And Alakazam's even worse because I want to say they thought he looked like a yogi or something, like levitating or something like that. It's been so long, I don't remember everything. I just remember it being that kind of ridiculously white supremacist Christianity kind of idea of why anything not European is bad for your kids.
Wow. Even though my mother's very, very Roman Catholic, I did try going to a Baptist church. And once people started, like, you know, catching the spirit and throwing shoes, I was like, nope, I'm done. This is not what I signed up for.
I was 10 or 12 the first time I went to a church that did something like that. And it was much, much later that I realized that this came from black churches because it was something that was presented to me and the church I was going to as a brand new, quote-unquote, movement of the spirit that started at the Toronto Airport Vineyard. So it was this brand new, totally novel thing to me. And, of course, the Airport Vineyard was a very white church. So, again, so much of evangelical fundamentalist Christianity is all about the erasure and white supremacy aspect of Christianity that's, of course, been there for centuries, but it's really interesting. But I was exposed to that at a young enough age that it didn't freak me out when the churches I was in started having it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Although it was never something that came naturally or really happened to me until I faked it. I actually made a little bit of a I made a little bit of a Twine game out of that about the moment when I came to realize that everyone was faking it, because not one single person who was so full of the Holy Spirit ever caught on to the fact that I was faking it to fit in.
Interesting. And this is a sidebar, but Mickey Kendall, who's been on the show before, Carnithia, she and I have known each other quite a time, and she actually has on her YouTube a little clip about faking getting the Holy Spirit as a kid. But she did it for just
I saw that. You posted it. Which is fantastic.
It was amazing. But it just made me think of it, because it's like, I was old enough to where I'm like, you know, this is not my thing. I don't feel touched like that. I'm kind of scared of whatever Holy Spirit that's going to make you scream and holler and no, thank you.
And then you go up for prayer and they start shoving on your forehead or say,
nah,
this isn't a natural falling out in the spirit. You're kind of trying to push me here.
Yeah, just, you know, I'm good. I'm just going to go. So,
I do know I've actually spent a lot of time helping relatives pick out games, because that's just what happens when you're in your 20s, I guess. And so you have people around who have older children. And I always just focused on, like, the games I knew about and why you do certain things in games rather than what you end up doing. So we wanted to ask, and that felt like a good segue, but it's not working out as well as I had projected. Do you think the same ideas about games being a bad influence on younger children still persist?
Yes and no. I think that the ideas have evolved a little bit, and I think, you know, things like the ESRB have kind of helped with that. You know, now you have a much more nuanced approach rather than it just being, oh, it's got blood, it's going to corrupt your kids, or, you know, anything like that. It's, you know, are your kids young enough that if they see someone fighting, they're going to not be able to associate that with pretend? Are they going to start fighting because of that? You know, and it's not that they'll, like, go beating up people, but they might start, you know, actually hitting instead of play hitting. George Dow talked about that on Isometric a year and a half ago, about limiting her son's the types of games that they could play, because she noticed that they were having a hard time disassociating. Well, that's what the people on the screen are doing, so why can't I do it? You know, it wasn't that it made them want to go out and be violent. It was that they weren't quite to that age where their filter said, this is animation, this is pretend, this isn't what you do. So I think there's a much more nuanced approach now. So, you know, of course, games can certainly be a bad influence on kids. You know, you have a parent who plays GTA 5 in front of their kid. That's not going to be good for them unless they're just doing the old Penny Arcade experiment of, I gave my kid a controller and he drove the car around and followed traffic laws. I was amazed. Yeah, and that was completely different from the kid watching the game. They were actually just engaging with it and had no idea that you could actually play the game it was meant to be played. So, I think the idea is still there, but I think that it definitely is an approach that's different from when, say, I was younger, because it's not this blanket, all video games are bad. You know, it's a much more, find out what works for you, and, you know, maybe don't expose your kids to tits and ass and gore.
True.
I actually once had to, I sort of had to get a parent to wrap their head around why I would recommend Grand Theft Auto 4 over another game, because Nico Bellic is a profoundly tragic character who doesn't hide how horrible it all is. Like, it treated violence more or less with respect in the story. Five does not.
Yes.
No, five just kind of went off the rails really, really hard. I was just like, nope, not trying to mess around with GTA after five, so. You know, but since we're talking about, you know, picking games for kids and things like that, and you mentioned that your daughter's only three, that makes me wonder, what kind of gaming environment, ideally, would you want for her to come into as she ages, you know, either from, like, you know, the age she is now, the teenager, adulthood?
I don't want to say controlled, because it's not quite the word I'm looking for, although it's close, but kind of a guided environment, I think. You know, and that's what we try to do, whether we'll sit and we'll play, you know, simple multiplayer games, whether like, say, Castle Crashers. She still loves sitting down at the couch and playing Castle Crashers, even though she is still at the point where she kind of goes off to one side and just hammers on the attack button for a while and may or may not actually hit anyone. But, you know, also going into games, it can actually, you know, help with reflexes, things like that. There's a new Steven Universe rhythm game that came out on Android and iOS that she loves to play. And, you know, it's got some of the same kind of rhythm moves as, like, what was the Elite Beat Agents on the DS did, where you got your taps in time with the tempo, you got tap and hold, you got slide moves, and, you know, she picks it up. You know, she may still only get one or two stars on a level, but she's actually cleared a lot of the game by herself in the time that she has to play. And it's giving her a little bit of rhythm, it's giving her a little bit of a, you know, sense of accomplishment with the level too, because, you know, when she actually clears it with, you know, more than one star, you should hear her cheer.
Wow, that's impressive for a 3-year-old.
Kids pick things up faster than you'd believe. You know, it's gone from, "Daddy, can you come beat this level for me?" to, "I'm going to try it again one more time and see." And more often than not, when she tries it again, she at least gets that one star clear. But, you know, it's the kind of thing I'd love to kind of, every now and then I'll actually let her take the controller with a more 3D game, although I'm of the opinion that she's going to have to grow into 3D games, just because conceptualizing that kind of movement doesn't seem to come naturally, even though that's how we move. she's still very much in the phase, like, I'll load up Hyrule Warriors in two-player mode and I'll let her take the Wii U tablet, because of course she loves to have her own screen right there. And she'll end up running in one direction and not able to do much, but it's giving her a little bit of introduction to that concept of the 3D motion and giving her a little bit of a footing there, which not like that's a life skill she needs to have or anything, but as far as gaming goes, it's kind of easing her into it, because I'm there playing with her, and, you know, I can make sure that she doesn't get totally wailed on while still giving her a chance to, you know, enjoy the accomplishment as she develops more of those movement skills. And of course, one of the most fun things, one of the most fun moments I ever had with her was about a year ago. Yoshi's Island, the Game Boy Advance version, came out on the Wii U Virtual Console, and she was just fascinated by the graphics, you know, the kind of colorful crayon-like animation. And so she gets over and sits on my lap and, you know, asks if she can play. At, you know, 2 years old. And so I say, sure. And I kind of just stare off to one side, because I'm occasionally prone to, "Let me help you." So if I kind of don't look, I can just let her experiment. And so I was just kind of looking off to one side doing my thing. And I hear her go, "Boo, boo." And I look down, and she's figured out that if you press down on the controller, Yoshi not only crouches, but covers his eyes. And then when you let go, he uncovers his eyes. And so she was playing peekaboo with Yoshi.
Oh my God, that's adorable.
And that was the cutest moment I've ever seen, because I had no concept that you could or would ever do that in the game, because of course I've been playing side-scrollers for years. So my concept is just get from point A to point B. Enjoy the graphics while you go. And so in her exploration of the controls, she had a completely new game that was just entrancing her.
Wow, that's awesome. Huh.
Indeed. Yeah, it would have never occurred to me either. I think you may have touched on this earlier, but do you have any projects coming up that you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, I've got at least one song, possibly two. I've got one cover that I want to really sit down and work hard on. I did a acoustic cover of Mike Moody's The Gardeners, literally like a week after she first published it on her SoundCloud, because I just fell in love with the song so much. And I've been wanting to do more of kind of a pop rock cover of it ever since, and just haven't quite figured out all the tweaks I need to make to my instruments and all the progressions I want to make in the difference. But when I do finally figure it out, she and I have talked about actually collaborating on that cover, so that, you know, since she's a drummer as well as a keyboard player, she'll actually contribute the drums and most likely other vocals and keyboards on it, hoping for like an organ or something, like a U2 sound. So I'm looking forward to kind of getting to sit down and take a crack at that. And I've also got a song that I just kind of have been working on, in very loose quotes here, working on. I came up with a chord progression, and my daughter asked me to sing her a song. So I asked her what she wanted it to be about, and she wanted it to be about a princess. So I just kind of started making up whatever I could to sing to her. And I need to actually write down what I have and then go back through it and make everything fit into a better scansion, because, you know, when you're coming up with lyrics on the fly, you're not always coming up with perfectly in rhythm or perfectly in rhyme lyrics. But I really love the sound of it. So I'm hoping to sit down and really put that in very soon as well.
Cool.
Because she'll still ask me to sing it, even though it changes a little bit every time.
Aww. So I didn't put this in the show notes, but it was something that I was thinking about as we were talking, and also because I followed him on my account, and I see that you tweet a lot of stuff that's, you know, both political and personal. And I was thinking about this because it's kind of a segue, it's kind of not. But there were two things in the news recently that I want to kind of touch on. One was the change that Steam has made to how reviews are done, or now reviews count. I don't know if either of you have seen that.
I saw a tiny little piece about it. I didn't actually click through because I saw it in the middle of the workday, so I didn't really have time. But was something about Kickstarter review, or like Steam codes no longer like having any weight to
them? So basically what this is, an attempt supposedly by Steam to keep fake reviews and score boosting from showing up on Steam. So what they want to do is they're claiming that they're banning false reviews. And what they're doing is, if you redeemed a Steam key, I think, or got a key anywhere outside of Steam other than buying it, I think the review won't count toward the score. And David, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm looking it up since I didn't throw a link in our notes.
I found this article, but I haven't finished reading it, so I can't correct you if
that's
you're
okay.
Wrong.
It's entirely possible that I'm wrong. But I just found that interesting that, you know, you're removing a subset of scores from someone who may have gotten either a review copy, or if they got the key in some other way that basically Valve didn't agree with. And I just thought that was very interesting. And like the idea is noble. However, the mechanism they're doing it by just seems to really cut out a lot of smaller devs or people who may get a key somewhere else outside of buying it directly from Steam.
Yeah, because I mean, that kicks out Kickstarter, that kicks out Humble Bundle keys, that kicks out developer giveaways, which are all avenues where I would expect an honest review would, you know, typically come from. You know, a Kickstarter backer would be very honest if they were disappointed or if they were happy. You know, Humble Bundle, you're motivated to kind of give your feedback because of the, you know, deal you got on the game. I mean, it seems like it would be better to just ban any reviews from someone who doesn't actually have a licensed copy of the game. That would make a lot more sense than banning keys that didn't come straight from buying it on Steam.
And, you know, I buy a lot of stuff through Humble Bundle and redeem it on Steam. So that would just go, what if I really, really like the game? And you just decided, hey, this is no longer valid if you didn't buy directly from us. Because I have so many games I've got through Humble Bundles, or I've won a game on someone's stream, or somebody sent me a key because they want me to stream it or something. So that's really, I mean, it's just really bullshit, to be frank.
Yeah.
What do you think about this? Because do you often leave reviews on Steam, David?
one second.
While David is gathering his thoughts, the reason I thought of this is because a game that I consulted on is going through the Steam Greenlight process, and the Steam Greenlight process seems to be just kind of a wild, wild west thing, and I know that Jim Sterling
has talked about this. Yeah, it's
pretty messy. Yeah, and Jim Sterling has talked about this quite a bit, especially recently, and it's very interesting to kind of look at something you're involved with now be part of that process. And, you know, the change to reviews and seeing the way that people are responding to the game are really interesting. And interesting in that quote-unquote interesting way, not a, hey, this has actual intellectual value interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I can see on one hand, if they're not removing the reviews entirely, if someone is actually interested in the game, they might scroll through and read them. But on the other hand, if you take away that, you know, positive negative weight at the top, that's going to make a lot of people just glide on by without really bothering to look at it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't give that a lot of weight because I never know if this is a game that's being given a fair shake by people, maybe if it's Call of Duty or something, which, you know, I don't know if you can even buy Call of Duty through Steam, but
I think at least one of them.
So, you know, a game like that is going to get a positive review because it's just got such legs on it and such a legacy that people are just so used to a Call of Duty coming out every year. They're just going to go, oh, hey, it's Call of Duty. Of course I like it. And, you know, and give it a false positive, because how many different games can you make where you get to kill people? But a lot, apparently.
From what I read, it seems like the reviews will still be there. It just doesn't affect the score or the thing it says next to the game.
Oh, where it says like positive, negative, mixed.
Yeah, and I don't know. It seems like it may be. I would honestly prefer if they just like let us know what percentage of the reviews were from what. You know, with like some bullet points of like, this is what this usually means. I'm all about just informing consumers, I mean.
Yeah, more data is always better.
Well, yeah, because I can go, oh, 30% of the reviews are from people who didn't even have to pay for it because they got a review copy.
And it is the same amount of work on Valve's end, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure. I just think it's interesting that, you know, they decided to do this, and it just seems like, I mean, I'm sure to us on this side of it, it seems sudden, but I'm sure it's been in the works for a while.
I mean, I'm sure it ultimately comes down to Valve wanting to set their own prices, you know, rather than allowing things like a Kickstarter exclusive price or Humble Bundle having those really low prices. I know Valve tried to integrate with Humble for a little while, and then that disappeared, because I used to be able to just click on the Humble Bundle purchase and it was in my Steam account. Now I've got a copy of the key.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that being the case for a little while. Now it's like, oh, great. Now I have to like have four windows open. And so it's interesting. And the reason I brought up the Steam Greenlight is because there's been some interesting conversation going on about Paper Jump, which I consulted on. And it's interesting to see how people, you know, just look at a title and dismiss it, or they assume that this is just, oh, a clickbait kind of game. And, you know, there's not too much of a bias because it wasn't like I spent hours and months or in weeks consulting, but it is still something that I touched. So to kind of see that dismissal of something because simply, oh, it's politics, ew, I don't want it.
Yeah, I'm actually really curious to try that out. I was going to try it right before the podcast, but my wireless router crapped out and I had to make a mad dash to the store.
Oh, no.
So I lost that bit of time.
Oh, no. So it was just something I was thinking of. It's just like when you're a creator, because you do music, you know, David, you're working on your own RPG, and you know, we have this podcast and I do other stuff. Is that kind of how do you look at criticism objectively, if you can look at it objectively? Because it's hard to see that response when you know that's not the case.
Well, if I've learned anything from like working with publishing and so on, it's that it's not objective. It doesn't exist.
So you think it's not possible to look at critique of your work objectively?
It's not possible for anyone to look at any work objectively. They always bring something with them.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't thinking of it in terms of I can look at anything objectively, more just like if I do a thing and someone critiques it, you know, and critiques it fairly or unfairly, is there a way to compartmentalize that and take the emotion out of it?
I think it can depend a lot on how the critique happens. You know, like if you got something like, 8chan Brigade coming in to just, you know, drag a game and kill its reviews. On one hand, you've got that compartmentalized, these are just a bunch of, you know, this is just a harassment mob. They're not serious. They've probably never even seen the game itself, and their opinion doesn't matter. On the other hand, you still have Bat Brigade, you know, flooding comments, flooding reviews. And I think, honestly, if something like that happened to me, it would be very hard to compartmentalize, because I'd very easily think, yeah, fuck these guys. But at the same time, the sheer numbers would be overwhelming, I think.
Yeah, there is a... I feel like there's definitely some things you can eliminate from consideration when it comes to criticism. But for the most part, I don't know. Criticism performs an important function by making creators aware of certain things about their work that they should be cognizant of moving forward. But you can usually tell which critiques are in that camp by how well written they are.
True. Very, very true.
Depending on your personality, it can be sometimes hard to separate the just asshole criticism from the constructive criticism. You know, because sometimes if you're too invested, it can come across as anything negative is just an asshole or someone trying to bring you down. But if you can get to that point of understanding the constructive critique versus the just pointless dragging, the real criticism does help a lot. And when I get feedback on things that I've written or things that I've performed, I really do value the, this could be better, you know, what, you know, because you can come back next time and really use that to improve.
Okay.
I'm sure, though, you try to gauge what your critics are bringing to the material themselves.
Absolutely.
What they brought with them. Because there are certainly places where you can have completely valid criticism and be like, but it's just coming from a different place than the work. Where, you know, there's some, like, circumstances where you're like, all right, there's got to be a reason why this didn't come across that is purely about the places we occupy in society.
True. Very true. Huh. So that was my random throw out a question part of the podcast. Because I was like, huh.
Yeah, I did see that, and it did strike me as weird. I hadn't really looked into it, but I don't think that's a positive change.
Okay. Do you think it's a positive or negative change, David?
It's probably not going to work out well. Either for Valve or society. I'm not sure which is preferable. I use their platform.
Yeah, I've got a lot of Steam games right now, so. So yeah, that was just a kind of, hey, this is actually going on. We can talk about it right now. Random segue into our question. We got a question from Jared, who we actually just talked to before we spoke with you. And Jared wants to know, what is your favorite instrument and what is your least favorite instrument, either to play or listen to?
Okay, so I think my favorite is probably a little bit obvious, but it's guitar in all of its forms, whether playing or listening, because quite honestly, there is, and many people disagree with me, I'm sure, but there is nothing mind as beautiful as a well-played guitar. You know, from things like, you know, Prince's solo on Purple Rain to Joe Satriani playing Always With Me, Always With You. There's very little that can just stir me up the way a guitar can. And as far as least favorite instrument, that's a really hard one, because it's hard to find an instrument that doesn't sound amazing in its own context. You know, sure, it might not sound great within a certain genre of music, but most instruments sound really, really amazing when you find them in the right context, or when you have someone creative enough to merge them into a new context. So I'm going to go the asshole route and say steel guitar, just because it's mainly used in country music.
It's not an asshole thing if that's what you think. So.
I've heard steel guitar played well, but when I hear steel guitar, I think, oh God, it's CMT. You know, fuck the entire hell off.
You're just like, you start hearing Deliverance music, even though it's not the same instrument.
See, I can deal with banjos better than I can deal with steel guitar, because steel guitar is almost always that twangy, slidey, you know, I lost my dog yesterday.
Oh,
kind of. Whereas, at least with a banjo, you could have bluegrass or some kind of fusion with it that actually sounds good.
Yeah. Wow. Now that's stuck in my head. But it's true. It's the kind of country music where it's like your dog ran away, your woman left you, you lost your job in the coal mine.
And your truck has a flat tire.
Yep. Oh my God, that's hilarious. So David, would you like to lead us into our last segment, since I kind of took the listener question?
It's okay. We usually talk about what we're playing or reading or watching. Tanya and my answers will probably be about the same as last week. So Tim, do you want to tell us what you've been playing or reading?
Sure. So the latest thing I've been playing is Revolution 60, which is Brianna Wu and Giant Space Cats game. Because when she mentioned that she wanted to make it reminiscent of Typing of the Dead back last year sometime, that got me very curious. And I've been having a lot of fun with it. It's an interesting story. She was kind of going for Paragon Renegade kind of Mass Effect style choice system with a little more time pressure, I think. Although I think that she's very much biased toward Renegade playthroughs. But yeah, it's kind of fun, and you really can't sleep on it, which is bad for me because I get distracted very easily. So I had a character get choked to death because I looked away for a minute.
Oh, okay then.
But the combat system is interesting. It kind of combines a little bit of like a real-time version of, say, Final Fantasy Tactics with occasional semi-QTE / semi-Typing of the Dead, where you can trigger special abilities and you have to do like small quick time events and type in key phrases. So it's pretty cool. Beyond that, I've been playing Jotun, which I picked up on Humble Bundle, speaking of non-Steam purchase keys. And I haven't been playing it much this week, but I did play quite a bit last week with my daughter, because she thinks the giant fights are just amazing. And so I was able to, even though the mythological concepts zoom right over her head, you know, the talking about the Norse mythology with her a little bit was fun, and talking about the different giants and what they do and what she thinks they might do based on seeing them was really fun. And so we'd come across a particularly hard Jotun and she'd be like, "You can do it, Dada, you can do it." And, you know, get my ass kicked a few times, and then when I finally came back and beat the giant, she'd jump and dance around cheering, which was just adorable as hell to watch. And the game itself is gorgeous, and I love having the Norse mythology kind of woven in so much into the game. Not really, you know, not adapted for an American audience, just kind of thrown right in there. I think the narrator, I don't know what language the narrator speaks. I want to say it's Norwegian, possibly Finnish, but it's the entire story is told through, you know, subtitles. So you even have the language kind of putting you into the mind of this Viking warrior who is just a badass woman in her own right. And I highly recommend that one. That's a lot of fun. And then after seeing Sharif Jackson talk about it, I played WWE 2K15 after picking up 2K16 off the free Xbox Games of Gold last month. And it is ridiculously fun. The counter system feels unfair because they're trying to make it feel like a wrestling match where you have the slow comebacks and, you know, the sudden shifting of momentum. So until you really get the timing for it, it's very frustrating. I had picked up one of the 2K games several years ago and gave up on it because I got so fed up trying to get the counters down. But giving it a little bit more of a chance this time around, it got really fun. And since I didn't grow up watching wrestling, it actually exposed me to some of the touchstones of wrestling that I missed growing up, which is interesting. And then, not in the show notes, but I've also been reading A Hall of Keys and No Doors by Amy Mears, which is really interesting. I wasn't sure what to expect, but I saw a writer that I like, you know, retweeting a link to it, and it's actually a very strong bisexual representation in it. Not like exploitative, very much just a very, as far as I can tell, very realistic portrayal. There's, you know, lesbian characters. None of it is played for titillation. It's all just, this is who they are, and that's just a part of who they are. But it's a very interesting kind of supernatural. It's not really suspense. It's just kind of a supernatural slice of life almost. And it has been a very enjoyable read so far.
Oh, cool. I'll have to check that one out. So, David, what have you... I know what you've been playing, but
yeah.
What have
you been? Yeah, I've been playing Star Trek Online because it's free. It's big reason. Also, it apparently their console ports came out recently, so people were posting screenshots, and that's what another reason I ended up playing it again.
Nice.
Unfortunately, the people on console and the people on PC have their own servers, so I can't give people things.
That's a shame. I was going to see about playing with you sometime. I downloaded it and let my wife create the character because character creators are her drug.
Oh, you get the same character creator for each and every officer on the bridge that you recruit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Huh. Interesting.
It is a level of customization I haven't seen in anything else except for... I'm sure there's something, but I can't remember.
And you've also been playing Fallout 4, I see.
Yep. I do think whenever they end up writing new content for it, they are getting slightly better, or they're stealing from better sources. Okay. They're Bethesda. I feel fairly optimistic about the future of this franchise.
Okay.
Fallout 3 was terrible. I don't care what anyone says. It was the worst writing of.
Tell us how you really feel, David. Don't hold back. As usual, I've been playing Dragon Age Inquisition because the power of modding compels me, and I can make a Fenris as Inquisitor, which has been interesting because you can't really make choices that would fit the character unless you go all aggressive. So it's been interesting kind of trying to retrofit a faux character that exists in canon into a playthrough through modding. And also Masquerada, which by the time this airs, I will have played the prologue and the game should be out. And it's a Singapore studio who are using the game and the medium to talk about the fact that being gay is illegal in Singapore. So one of your characters is gay, and there's a whole subplot, without giving too much away, about kind of him, you know, accepting who he is, but also kind of trying to fight to not be exiled and ostracized because of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it should be out, and I'm trying to do a stream on launch day, if possible, and they will try to either be around or give me keys to do a giveaway. So hopefully By the time you all hear this episode, you will have a copy of Masquerada, and you can go play it and enjoy it.
I see there's a demo on Steam.
There is, and I have already streamed it, but I think you should go play it and enjoy it. And sadly, with that, our time is almost up. So, Tim, it was great to finally have all three of us behind the mic at one time.
This was a lot of fun.
Yay. I'm glad, and I always enjoy both talking with you on Twitter and, you know, in other venues. And it was nice to actually meet you when you got a chance to come to Chicago. So with all that said, where can people find you online?
Well, I'm on Twitter at a new handle, thanks to a bit of a scare, at Tempo Andante, and Tempo is spelled T-I-M-P-O, because I can't resist a pun. And I'm also on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/Tempo Andante. And I'm not really many other places publicly, so find me there.
Awesome. And David, where can people find you?
I can be found on Twitter at Red Conversation, where I'm not sure what I mostly talk about anymore.
Okay.
The election?
Oh, God. I'm sorry.
Movies, I guess. I can also be found at patreon.com/redconversation. You can find a more cohesive view of what I'm doing and what I'm working on there. And my personal website is davidlreeves.com, where you can contact me if you require editorial services of any capacity. I mentioned earlier that everyone brings something with them when they read something. Authors also bring a lot of baggage with them when they write things, and essentially, language betrays. We can say things that we do not mean to say because we believe them on some level, and it's always good to have someone who's versed in the sort of subtleties of language that way look over things.
Cool. And I am Cipher of Tear pretty much everywhere. If you find Cipher of Tear, it should be me. If it's not me, then let me know. That means someone's impersonating me. Why? I have no idea. Anyone would choose to do that, but hey, to each their own. And with that, we are done with back-to-back episodes of recording this week, so we made up for that deficit of not recording for 2 weeks in one day. Thank you, Tim. You know you're always welcome to sit in for one of us or just come hang out and talk about gaming and other general stuff.
Well, hey, if you ever need me to sit in, let me know, because it's always fun, and I always have a great time.
Awesome. All right, and that is a wrap for episode 66. Bye, y'all.
Bye. We'll be right back.